Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining me today to answer your gardening questions is our green team, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Dor Tavid. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia, Director of Horticulture and Operations at the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Dor Tavid is Director of Horticulture at the Berkshire Botanical Garden based in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. If you have any tips or strategies in the garden, we'd love to hear about them. Of course, Fred, Greg, and Dorta are on hand to help make your garden grow. We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You know, it's been a cold couple of weeks. Today feels like spring. Nice to have you all back with us for the first time in 2012.
Nice to be back.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again.
And, you know, my wife, I was talking to Fred about this. My wife, very concerned about the crabapple tree we have out front. And she said, gosh, I'm afraid with the warm weather we had and then the couple weeks of cold weather, there'll be no blossoms this year. That's what she loves, those 4, 5, 6 days, whenever they're up. And are we going to be in trouble here?
Well, you know, you could be, but probably not. I know if you get a really heavy frost, you could, you know, tend to lose some of that. But I think it's more of a concern with the edible fruit.
Okay.
As opposed to crab apples. Crab apples are really tough, and it's rare that you see all the blossoms get blighted right off of crab apples.
All right.
Yeah, so I think
you're in pretty shape.
Agree.
Okay. So
the magnolias were in trouble this year, of course. So, yeah. You know, they got blasted.
And but crab apples are tough.
Please turn your cell phones off before the program.
If you notice, like forsythia has actually been in bloom and open through several frosts.
Yeah.
In fact, so what she's concerned about has been actually happening to forsythia, and they really have done well. They have not been affected. As Dorda was saying, magnolias, they burned. All the magnolias that were open anyway were affected. So it does have a lot to do with what it is. And, you know, Fred's mentioning apples, especially crab apples, really tolerant of that. So unless we see something extreme, and my bet is crab apples will be blooming this time next week if the weather
which is a little scary.
Holds.
Yeah, things are budding up. Things are looking good.
Now, of course, you know, whether or not the Graff's crab apple tree blossoms or blooms is not really as big of a deal as what awaits the fruit tree farmers. And how do they stand? I mean, are they going to be okay?
Well, it depends on just how far things go with this next week of heat. If the flowers, if they start blooming and then we get a hard frost, then we're in trouble.
And I think I heard on this radio station there was some interviews about some orchardists, and they had some possible damage back in March. But I think for the most part with apples, they probably are coming through it at the moment. So yeah, it has to do with everything has to do with whether it's going to get cold later on.
Greg Ward is here, Fred Breglia and Dor Tavid. It's the gardening show, and the number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now, Sharon from East Greenbush called, but then had to leave. So I'll try to interpret the question as written by our call screener. It says, Norway spruce as hedgerow. Anybody?
I personally think it's a good plant. I've seen it used very successfully as a hedgerow plant. It's going to be a big hedge, though. So if that's what your goal is, that's a great plant. It's probably the most adaptable of all the spruce. It's a very tolerant plant. It doesn't have any real major pests or disease problems associated with Norway spruce. So it is a good one. But
fast grower.
It's a fast grower. It's stable, structurally sound. It doesn't have a lot of weak wood, so you don't get a lot of branch breakage. It sheds snow really well. It's a good plant. Like I said, it's going to get tall. You know, we're
probably
talking 50 foot hedge easily. You know, beyond
50 feet tall.
Over time. So when you space that plant, I've seen
a lot of
people get in a lot of trouble when they start to plant these Norway spruce really close together. Next thing you know, you've got branches growing into trunks, and because it looks like, you know, a lot of space when you first start setting them up.
So probably about 15 to 20 feet wide, I would say. So it's a big hedge. One thing that I think is really nice about them is that they do keep their branches all the way down, so you do really get a solid hedge. Sometimes with the white pines or the evergreens, they might lose some of their lower branches.
Mm. And they're also resistant to deer browse. So it's another plus, especially if you have low branching. It's less prone to susceptible to deer browsing in the wintertime. They'll take all the other plants before they'd have to be starving to start to eat the Norway spruce and Colorado spruce.
Yeah. All right.
I just to say specific spacing, like, you know, 8-12-foot centers, Dory was sort of referring to that, are probably what you would want to consider. It does leave a lot of space in between them initially, but they get big, as everyone's been saying, so it won't take long for them to come together.
All right, let's go now to the phones at 800-348-2551. Cindy in Hudson Falls. Cindy, you are first.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about fencing out predators. At our garden at home, we don't really have any issues except with squirrels, and we're able to manage that. But we're getting ready to put a small garden at our church to support the food pantry. And the church is out in the country, and we're going to have to worry about deer and groundhogs and rabbits.
Yeah. Can you fence the area? Is that possible?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking it's only going to be about a 4-by-16-foot bed at this point.
Yeah, I would recommend highly just fencing the area. They make some fantastic deer fencing products if you go online or if you got a hold of me at the Arboretum. In fact, if you want to see, I don't know how far you are from Landis Arboretum, but we have some of our, I would say, really prone collections of, like, rhododendrons, for example. We have the entire collection fenced off,
mm-hmm.
and we use a certain type of deer fencing, which gives a very long, long, long lifespan to the actual product. It's made out of plastic, but it's pretty indestructible. It's extremely resistant to photo degradation from the sun,
mm-hmm.
and it's very inobtrusive. You hardly see it, and it comes in various lengths. It's easy to install. I don't know. How about you guys have any experience with that?
What kind of posts do you use for that?
We use a cable for the big area, and then... So we have a cable that runs around the entire perimeter of the rhododendron collection.
Right.
And then the deer fencing hangs from the cable.
Yep.
And then on individual specimens, we'll use the same type of deer fencing. And we'll just use, they're like those green metal posts. Fence posts that we've used. And then we just zip tie it to it. And then this time of year, for a lot of our problems, we cut it down. You know, take them down this time of year opens it all up because you're not going to have we're trying to keep deer out in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But this would work really, really well for a homeowner, for a community garden. It would work really well. It's easy to install, indestructible.
You're talking about rabbits and other things also, you were saying?
Rabbits and groundhogs.
Yeah. And that would work for everything. I mean, you could, but the thing with the rabbits, also like other smaller critters, groundhogs, I would recommend actually if you were going to put a fence up, you want to dig down at
mm-hmm.
least probably 8 inches, and then you install this deer fencing below the ground, and then just backfill it. Because what they'll do is they'll try to tunnel under it. If you don't do that, they will get under it. But they don't go down. You know, if you went down 8 inches, they're not going to try to go, 3 feet. So
okay, Cindy. Hey, thanks a lot. We appreciate it.
I had one other question.
Very quickly.
Okay, I had heard that if you string fishing line around, that they can't see it, but when they bump into it, it scares them.
The deer, yeah.
Yeah, just deer.
Yeah.
And I've tried that, and it does work pretty well. But really, getting something all the way to the ground, and into the ground, because you will get those, especially woodchucks, digging
mm-hmm.
their way under. And then the deer, up to 7 feet, 8 feet is probably recommended for the deer. If it's only going to be 4 feet wide, then
mm-hmm.
you probably can come down a bit. It will make them nervous if it's a very narrow space for them to enter. But if it's going to be, say, 16-by-16, you want to be up in that 8-foot area.
All right, Cindy, we got to go here and move on, but thank you very much. Let's go to Lillian in Scotia. Lillian, you're on.
Yes, hi. You talked a little while ago about those hard frost.
Oh, we lost you. Are you still there?
Well, I think we can address that question.
Yeah, Lillian, regardless. You listen, and I think we know where you're going with this.
Yeah. So for this year, the buds that are blasted by the frost, those magnolias will not bloom again this year, but the tree will set buds and bloom next year if we don't have a repeat.
And the leaves will come out.
That's right.
They'll be fine.
Yeah.
And it'll be a perfectly leafy shrub by the time it's supposed to be, which is
mid-May. But no flowers.
No flowers have passed.
Yep. There may be a few buds that didn't get burned. They were sort of in the process of opening up, so there might be a few that haven't...
That opened late.
Okay. So that's that with regard to the magnolia. And Lillian, we thank you for calling, and she may try again. You never know. Jim in Kingston. Jim, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon to you guys and ladies. Listen, I have a fern leaf Japanese maple that was had approximately a 500-pound root ball, was an 8-foot tree, rather large for a fern leaf. I put it in the ground when we had the tail end of the heat exchange here in March. Now, we did have one or two nights that were down around 22, 23 degrees. Okay. I covered the tree, and I put some lighting underneath it. But unfortunately, the leaves look like it's almost fall time for them. And I'm wondering, do I cut it back?
No,
or
no.
Do I leave it as such, and will new leaves grow either this year or next?
If what you see is red, that's actually good. That is the pigment that comes out into in those leaves first, and actually it's what's left in the end as well, for the most part, for fall color.
Let me go back a little bit. I had purchased this tree. It came from a hothouse. Now, this tree was already full bloom.
In full leaf, you mean, right?
Yes, it was in full leaf, yes.
Yeah, I mean, you might have some if it hadn't been sort of acclimated, it was in a really hot environment, and then, you put it out into
the outside
environment, and it didn't get hardened off. So some of that foliage may be damaged, but I would think that the tree would be fine.
Yeah.
The tree seems to be healthy. There is green growth, and there is some new leaves that are coming out.
Yeah, It'll relief. It'll just come out. It'll take some weeks to do that. I've seen that before with the Japanese maples. They're very susceptible, and especially because it was grown inside in a greenhouse.
And so a month from now, you may find some of those branches, those end branches, have dried up, and you can prune them then. But I would definitely wait till then.
Yeah, and I wouldn't prune it now.
All right, put it off for a while because the leaves, a number of leaves are already curling. They are already dying.
That's so. Just hard, a sort of a climactic change that's going to cause that.
Right. Jim, we have a break here, but thanks for calling, my friend. Appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551, the first gardening show of the year. You have one open line if you want to call right this second, 800-348-2551. More to come.
Support for Vox Pop on WAMC comes from Joyelle's Jewelers, Del Mar, New York, specializing in custom jewelry and repair, laser welding, designer jewelry, and gifts. JoyellesJewelers.com. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. And Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York, showing Hollywood, American, independent, and foreign films. Their Ultraviolet Cafe is next door for before or after the show. Open daily, spectrum8.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Greg Ward is here from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from the Landis Arboretum, and Dor David from the Berkshire Botanical Garden. We always have some announcements to make. Dorda, why don't you start?
All right. First, I want to say it's a lovely time to visit the Berkshire Botanical Garden. All the minor bulbs are in full bloom. The Scilla and the Kinodoxa, they're both very low to the ground, blue flowers, very intense blue. They form beautiful corbets, and they look fabulous under the what's left of the magnolias. The cherries, the forsythias that are blooming now. Early primroses are blooming too. So come see us. It's a great time to visit the garden. And the main thing on our horizon is our big plant sale, which takes place this year on Friday, May 11 and May 12. This year the theme is Happy in Their Habitats, Choose the Right Plant for the Right Place. And it features plants appropriate to northeastern gardens, organized into the habitats in which they thrive. There'll be over 5,000 plants suitable for growing in the northeast. Many are propagated at the garden, and some of those things are not readily available elsewhere. We'll also have regional vendors with antiques and unique items for the garden and the patio, and other specialty plant vendors selling things such as organic herbs and vegetable seedlings.
Okay.
And that takes place again on Friday, May 11 and May 12. For more information, you can check our website at www.berkshirebotanical.org or call us at 413-298-298. 3926.
Quite a list. Half the show's gone. All right, let's go. Let's go to Greg.
Okay. I don't have a list of activities so much as just maybe a little reference on what to think about. Early spring this year, it's given us lots of time to get things done. I do want to remind you to water what you plant. We're on the dry side at the moment. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it won't last. And to water what you planted last year, especially last fall. A lot of rain last fall, but right now those plants' root systems still need to expand. So get out there and water last year's plants as well.
All right.
Lots of cool weather vegetable plants to put in, onions, lettuce, cabbage, kale, potatoes even. Hurry up and prune those fruit trees before it's they flower. And then lots of great planting and transplanting of woody plants and perennials can happen right now.
Okay. Fred?
All right. Well, let's see. Right, this coming up this weekend, we have what we call Spring Work Fest. If you're interested in volunteering at the Landis Arboretum, we're looking for volunteers to give us a hand doing our spring cleanup and just prepping the grounds for spring. And we call it Work Fest because we like to have fun. Why else would we work there?
Right.
So in any case, that's this Saturday from 10 to 4 p.m. And we also have a couple of star parties. The Albany area astronomers bring out if you've never been to an Arboretum star party, I got to say, it's really cool.
Really?
First and foremost. And the Albany area astronomers say that we're like one of the darkest skies in the entire area. So they're one of our favorite one of their favorite sites. They'll bring out these huge telescopes. Some of them are like thousands of dollars worth of telescopes.
Really?
And they are all about showing kids of all ages, adults, everything. They're as enthusiastic about stars as I am about trees.
So, Presumably, you're not underneath the trees when you're looking at the
stars.
No,
you're in the middle of a really open field on the top of one of the highest spots at the Arboretum. And there's two of them coming up for April. There's one on April 20th, and there's one on that's a Friday night, and one on April 21st, Saturday night. And they both start at 9 p.m.
Okay.
We also have a couple of classes on edible plants this year. April 22nd, there is what we call Little Green Thumb, Sowing the Seeds of Gardening. And it's kid-focused vegetable growing class.
Okay.
And that's going to be April 22nd at 1 o'clock. And then we have one for adults learning all about what we call kitchen gardening, things that you use very commonly. You can grow plants and
herbs and whatnot
and actually save a few bucks. And then the last, going right along with the theme of edible plants, the last edible plant course for the month is going to be April 29th. And this one's edible wild plants. So if you want to learn how to make tea from pine needles and everything else, this would be your class to go to. That's April 29th, starting at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's a Sunday.
See,
call
the
office for details, www.landisarboretum.org.
Say it again. I'm sorry. The website again, Fred?
It's www.landisarboretum.org.
Okay. We've done that. All right. Yes. Christy Carton, our call screener, said give the address. And by golly, he did. So, I'd be more concerned about the plants that you can't eat.
Well, I think they cover a lot of that stuff, too.
Good. That's
especially
more important.
The
pine needle tea I can do without, but eating those little red berries and kicking the bucket, that's what I want to avoid. Peter in Windsor, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a rose bush, and I've noticed the branches periodically swell up into a little ball on it. I cut it open and there's larva in there. Do you know what that is?
Say that again.
These rose bushes, the wild roses.
Yeah.
And the branch, a branch every now and then will swell up into a little kind of golf ball size, and I'll cut that open and there's larva in there.
So okay, so that's a gall.
It's definitely an insect gall.
Gall. Yep.
Which one, off the top of our heads, apparently we don't know, but is it? You said wild roses. Do you remember what kind of rose? What color flower?
A pink.
Pink. Yeah, I mean, so it's probably going to be blooming on older wood, which means you don't want to do a lot of pruning in order to have those blooms. You don't want to be doing a lot of spring pruning on that rose. But removing those galls when you see them before they actually mature would be the trick to sort of breaking that life cycle.
Right. Meaning I should break them off as soon as possible.
Exactly. So
get them
in July when you see the gall first forming, or do a little inspection, prune them out, July, August, so that they're not maturing and then flying around laying eggs and starting over next year.
Is there just a few of them, or is it like loaded? Like
it's getting busier each season.
It's getting busier each season. Yeah, so you want to definitely do something to, definitely pruning them after they bloom, getting those out of there and destroying them would be your best bet. You don't want to leave them because then that's just going to become a problem that multiplies more and more. And the fact that a lot of times the winters, especially this year, have been milder, I've seen an increase in general over the past handful of years. As these winter temperatures are milder, typically a lot of those cold temps kill a lot of the overwintering insects and diseases, and we're not losing them like we used to. So it's more and more of a problem. I'm seeing more and more pest issues.
That life cycle, if there's an exit hole, in the August, September, then whatever was in there, that larvae is leaving and then and is not going to be on the plant, but maybe laying egg masses on the plant is in the fall. Or it may be doing it, next month or even earlier or the end of this month. So that's why catching the ones you can catch would be the way to go.
And make sure you dispose of them, get them. Don't just put them on your compost pile or something.
Burn it.
Yeah.
Okay. But Peter, thank you very much. Let's go to Linda in Glens Falls. Linda.
I'm going to hang up wait a minute. I can hear you okay.
Yes, good.
Okay. I have a new piece of property. I just moved into a home a couple of years ago, and it has a hydrangea bush that was like on steroids out in front. It was huge. It was almost like 20 feet tall. And the snow this winter the weight of the snow caused it to split right down the trunk.
When does it?
So I sawed it off at the base, which I'm not sure that was the right place to saw it off. How do I resurrect that? Do I dig up the roots and plant it someplace else? Do I wait for shooters to come out of the ground? I don't know what to do if there's any possibility of bringing this tree back.
When did it normally bloom? Was it like a fall bloomer or?
Fall bloomer.
Fall, okay, so it's probably a paniculata grandiflora. And you're happy with the spot where it is? Or do you have a reason to move it?
No, I was happy with where it is.
Well, you should let it resprout then. You probably didn't have to cut it back so severely, depending on the extent of the damage, but you're better off leaving it where it is and letting it sprout and then nursing it back.
Cut it off?
I cut it off because it split right down to the ground.
No,
the
when?
The weight of the split the thing right in half.
When did you actually make the cut?
In the spring.
So you did it this spring?
Yes.
Like early on. Okay, so that actually was a good move.
Okay.
If you had to cut it, late spring, this early spring would be a better time to make that kind of a severe cut.
And if it was
so, it'll encourage it more to sprout out by doing it the timing that you did. So you lucked out there. Did you have something to add?
Only that if it was a tree and you want to make it a tree again as opposed to a multi-stem shrub, you will want to do some additional pruning, but really we probably would advise you to call us a year from now or even 2 months from now.
Okay.
Okay. So just let the shoots come up where they will?
Yeah, let them come up. And was it a single stem plant?
Yes.
It was. So then basically if you want to have another one that looks similar to that, what you would want to do is let all the shoots just grow and then look for like maybe one of the strongest shoots to selectively kind of keep. But I always recommend not taking them all away and leaving the one strong one, because sometimes when they're tender and they're young growing shoots, something happens to one of the shoots. So leave yourself a few of them. Yeah. And then after a year or so, this time next year, you could select just one, and then that should come back together, unless it was a grafted plant, in which case it may not be exactly the same variety.
Well,
but
Linda,
I think it should be fine.
Thanks a lot for the call, Linda. Now, we've had a request that we get your actual street addresses. So let's do this. Now, if we want to go, for instance, to Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, what's the street address?
600 Main Street, Great Barrington. And we do have a website. It's wardsnursery.com, all one word. And the phone number is 413-528-0166.
Dor David, the Berkshire Botanical Garden in Stockbridge?
The actual address is 5 West Stockbridge Road, but it's better known by the intersection of routes 102 and 183. We're right there in the intersection in the town of Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
And you have a website as well, right?
www.berkshirebotanical.org.
All right. Fred Breglia, the Landis Arboretum in Esperance.
Yeah, we're at 174 Lape Road, but if you were sending us something, you would want to go to P.O. Box 186. But if you're trying to GPS it, it's 174 Lape Road in the town of Esperance. We're just off of Route 20 And we have signs. Once you get into the town of Esperance, just follow the signs. And we're only like a mile and a half, 2 miles off of Route 20 in Esperance.
Excellent. All right, back to the program we go. Mary in Poughkeepsie, you're on the gardening show.
Hi, is this for Mary?
Yes, hi.
Okay, great. What is your opinion about my using bamboo as a privacy hedge? I have a lot of deer, and I don't want them to eat it, but I also have a lot of birds, and hopefully this is around the clock, I mean around the year, yearly, a season, you know, it's not seasonal, but it's year-round, would be a good cover for them. And if it is good, I know it supposedly grows fast, is it a good idea to plant it, and where can I buy it?
Well, the thing about bamboo is that you have to watch out for big danger signs around bamboo is that it can be a really bad spreader. So you want to pick types that are hardy, of course, but also that are clump forming. I would not recommend it as a screen. I would think of other things.
And if you're looking for wildlife cover, did you mention that?
Yes.
Yeah, then, you know, there are a lot of medium-sized woody shrubs, you know, native woody shrubs, shrub-form dogwood, winterberry, some viburnums, although there's some issues there, that will fruit as well as get big and bushy and be able to provide a screen.
And will deer eat this stuff?
I would say most of the ones I just mentioned are, you know, fairly deer-resistant. You know, there's always hesitation because deer will eat whatever they want to eat if they're hungry enough. But for the most part, those ones I mentioned, most of those shrubs are usually not browsed.
Okay. Mary,
what
thanks. Oh, go ahead.
Will they eat bamboo?
Only if they're really hungry. They could if it really gets severe. Like Greg said, they'll eat most anything if they are starving.
If you're obviously set on bamboo, you want to make sure, and it's a spreading one, you want to make sure you dig in some barriers and put some barriers in the ground, at least a foot deep, if not 18 inches, to contain the bamboo in that area.
Yeah, what kind of barriers are we talking about?
It could be a heavy-duty plastic, like several mil, or it could be a metal barrier.
Yeah, okay. Another trick for that, too, in barriers is you actually can literally install a large plastic, like, planting pot that you would buy, like, basically a tree would come in. You get it empty. A lot of nursery garden centers, they have a lot of those, like, especially landscapers. They want to get rid of them, so they'd probably give them to you free. And you could literally put those in the ground, dig a hole, plant the container, and then plant the bamboo in the container. And I've had people, you know, have pretty good luck doing it that way as well. You never got to take the container out, but it stops the roots from spreading out and taking over more of your yard than you want.
Okay, Mary, thanks a lot. We're going to let you go. And, you know, we hear so much about the dangers of bamboo. What are the pluses? Are there pluses?
They're beautiful.
I like bamboo.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
The stems are really lovely. They have a great, you know, fall or winter color as well as interesting structure. You know, there are bamboos that will grow 6 or 8 feet high and, as we've been describing, spread, and so they will provide a screen. There's a lot of nice bamboos that will only grow a foot high and add and be a pleasant ground cover as well.
Okay.
So a lot of good things about bamboo.
It's Vox Pop, the gardening show, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Frank in Albany. Frank.
Afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to get rid of some moss that has been growing on a concrete patio, and there's also some underneath a maple tree. Any suggestions?
On the patio, you know, muriatic acid or whatever patio cleaner the hardware store recommends. Under the maple tree, you just probably wouldn't advise it.
You also encourage turf, because if you have a good, healthy lawn in terms of grass, then moss doesn't usually compete with it. So if you improve the grass around maples, then, you know, aeration, thatching your lawn, fertilizing the lawn.
Mulching.
Putting down...
Right. You can mulch under the trees.
You can mulch under the trees, certainly a good solution. And also throwing down lime.
Yeah, is that a pH indication of a bad pH?
Moss
situation?
Doesn't like a lot of alkaline. It likes a little slightly more acidic. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Thanks, Frank. We appreciate it. Let's go to Tom in Amherst. Tom.
Yeah, hi. I'm raising elm trees from seed, and I'm wondering if they will be resistant to Dutch elms disease.
Well, what kind of elms are you raising from seed?
Well, I have American elm from my local area, and I got some English elm from the Boston Common.
Well, the American elms would not be necessarily resistant if you just got them from wild collected seed.
But,
so,
but if you grow 1,000 of them and you find some that are resistant, we can name those after you.
You could become famous.
And I'm teasing you, so, but what's out there? Sorry.
Yeah.
Right, what's out there are name selections of American elm that are disease resistant, and the way they were found was through trial and error.
That's right.
Okay.
And
one of the best
varieties, if for those of the listeners out there that are looking to replant elms that are resistant. There's a lot of different hybrids out there that are undergoing a lot of testing to find out which ones are resistant. Also, not just resistant qualities, but also structure, because the American elm had, of course, some of the best tree structure, I think, that, you know, every town in America has got an elm street for a reason, because they're a beautiful street tree that are extremely good branch structure. They have those nice vase shapes, and they're really adaptable. So one of the best ones, I think, right now is a variety called Jefferson. Tends to be showing the most resistance to Dutch elm disease, and also shows really good branch structure.
They're using a Princeton variety down in Springfield.
Yeah, they're good ones too.
What's happened is these varieties have become available, over time, and so everyone rushes to propagate and generate enough inventory so that you get an elm tree that's disease resistant. And Princeton has been the one that has been most available for the last 10 years. There are some others that were a little more available prior to that and are still more available, Valley Forge being one. There's another one I can't think of. Jefferson is the latest one.
It's a newer one.
And it's just becoming available. It is now something that you probably can find if you try looking around a little bit. And then English elm, I'm not sure about Dutch elm's disease on English elm. I'm not sure what the species is there, but we could look into that for you.
Yeah, if you want to be contacted, I can get you connected to I'm friends with a number of folks that are extremely in with the American elms. So if you send me an email to fred@landisarboretum.org, I could connect you with some people that are actually involved with the testing of a lot of these elms. So if you're really interested in it, I could definitely set you up with some contacts of mine.
All right, Tom, we have a break here, and thank you very much for calling. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number, 1-800-348-2551. The Gardening Show, we hit the home stretch and the lightning round coming up.
Support for Vox Pop on WAMC comes from the Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, Massachusetts. Since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor. BlueBonnetDiner.net. The New York State Tobacco Free Community Partners, working to reduce youth and adult smoking rates across the state and to help save lives. New York State Tobacco Free Community Partners at SmokeFreeCapital.org. Steel Engineering and Consulting, Troy, New York. Addressing building problems through engineering investigations and architectural designs. STEELEengineering.com. And Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting the Hot Club of San Francisco, featuring live jazz ensemble with music from the 1930s. Saturday, April 21st at 8 p.m., troymusichall.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Well, if you're scoring at home, Greg Ward's Nursery is in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Fred Breglia and the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Dorda Vide and the Berkshire Botanical Garden, Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Right?
That is true.
You got it.
Those are the addresses, right?
Right on the mark.
Yes.
All right, let's go back to the phones and Betsy in Saratoga. Betsy.
No, it's Nancy, but that's okay.
Hello, Betsy Nancy.
I have three arboretum that have been established for a number of years. And this winter, after we unwrap them, we wrap it in burlap because the snow normally is so damaging, and this year apparently not. But we unwrap them, and they seem to be dead. About half of one and and most of the
and you wrap them from head to toe.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the top is wrapped as well.
No.
So
is no,
the top
is open.
So is the top still green? Is there any
change?
No, nothing
is. It's one is green. The other two are like a grayish green, and they snap. The actual branches snap.
They were fall planted.
Oh, they were. They've been there for 4 years.
Oh, they've been there for 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes the wrapping itself can overheat the plant, and if the tops were open, if the top was open, and literally the top was still showing, then usually the top is not burned, and it will be greener than what was wrapped. But I have definitely seen problems with tight wrapping, especially burlap touching evergreen foliage for the length of winter. We've had a very warm, sunny winter, so that would sort of sound logical. But the other things to look for would be vole damage.
Yeah.
Voles could come right in there, and by feeding on those roots over the fall and winter, those plants would die.
Wow.
Possibly some girdling.
Yeah, check the stems.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say.
You should be able to tell if you taken them out yet, the plants?
No.
But you should be able to tell certainly if there's girdling or if there's root damage, and that would tell you what critter got them.
Yeah, look for the look at the trunks down, a foot or so from the ground, and just see if the bark looks normal or if it looks like it might have been gnawed. I've actually seen a number of ewes this year.
Really?
And throughout the area that have been girdled by probably voles.
I've had a lot of damage because a lot of my irises and my other plants are gone.
I would say check the stems, and if the stems look healthy, then probably more like the wrapping issues. But
So if your stems are green, if you scratch the wood and you see some green there, water them really well.
Yeah.
And wait.
Yeah, because arborvitaes can refoliate quite well.
Really?
Yep, they can. As long as the wood itself, like Greg said, is green. You scratch it with your finger. If it's green under the bark, it's still alive. Leave it alone. Water it. Keep your fingers crossed.
Thank you
very much. And there's a phrase I don't get to say enough, girdling by voles. So let's go to Marianne in Ulster Park. Marianne.
Hi. First, I'd like to thank you for validating a question I had last March. You had said that I could transplant my viburnum in March, and I was afraid to do it because I'd lose my bloom. It worked out fabulously.
Great to hear it.
So my question is, I purchase organic mulch, and I'm just wondering, is that so much better than regular mulch, and should I even go with something else?
Well, the only thing I would say, I have actually, at various International Society of Arboriculture shows, mulch is a fairly hot topic, believe it or not.
There's a lot of money in it.
There's a lot of money in mulch, yeah. So, and it's also a seriously good thing, can be a seriously good thing for plants, because it does a lot of benefits. It conserves water, regulates temperature, keeps weeds down, helps keep out competition, and also helps to do something that a lot of people don't realize in all those things. It actually creates a vertical action in the soil. So literally, by putting a surface mulch on the ground, you are literally going to create structure with your soil. The soil is the easiest way to describe this. Is going to be, think about your plumbing in your house. It's a whole vast system of tubes that allow water transport to go through your soil. And soil actually has all that plumbing in place, and not just for water, but for air exchange. And by putting a surface mulch, you actually create better structure, better piping for water and air exchange, so better plant growth. But a lot of these mulches that I see out there today, a lot of times are made out of various things that like old pallets ground up. I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but you don't really know what is in some of that stuff. And an organic, I think, mulch is probably a good way to say, at least we know kind of where it's coming from.
And
but,
there's
a lot of different mulches that work a lot of different ways.
We sell mulch, the first question I have actually for you is, I have never seen a label yet that says the mulch is organic. I see several labels that say it has been color enhanced or artificially colored. Certainly, as Fred said, there are mulches made out of recycled materials. But I've never seen an organic mulch, so
I don't get them in the bags. I get it bulk.
Okay.
I needed 6 yards.
So the bulk mulches are generally pretty good. They're local materials, and the one minor, potentially minor issue you can have with that is that that little artillery fungi that if you have a white house and you mulch with, Fred, correct me if I'm wrong, hardwood mulches, usually I think it's oak material, they're over the course of a year or two, this little fungi will grow on the mulch. It can grow on the mulch. Doesn't necessarily happen every time. And its spores are sort of jettisoned out of this little slingshot on the surface, the mushroom thing that forms on the surface, little cup, and they stick to your house, and they're little brown dots, and they don't come off.
Oh.
Yep.
Oh.
And that's
so
hence
if your house is brown,
fungus.
You're fine.
You're all set.
Yeah. You can always paint your house
brown.
Thank
you very much.
Marianne, thanks a lot for the call. Sarah in Delmar. Sarah, you're on.
Hi. Thank you very much. I bought two little trees that are snippets about a foot long, wrapped up in a little box, and a three clump of birch that's about 4 feet high. And I wondered when I can put them in the ground.
You can plant them right now.
This week looks great.
And if I don't get them in the ground, should I open up the little root ball and water it?
You want to keep them cool and moist until you put them in the ground. Keep them out of sunlight. Don't let them dry out, get overheated.
Okay.
You want to just, you know, like I said, cool and moist and dark.
So in a plastic bag in your fridge or that four-footer maybe in a cool spot in the back of your garage?
Yeah,
but
basements.
I've got it in the garage in the backyard, but I didn't know if the little leaves needed sunlight on them.
Yeah, just basically as soon as you can plant, as soon as you can get them in the ground,
possible.
The better.
Thank you so much.
Yes, Sarah, thank you very much. It's the gardening show. 10 minutes left, so it is the lightning round. So let's keep our questions brief and the answers brief, and we'll see how many people we can get in at 800-348-2551. It's Jack in Liberty. Jack, you're on.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I'll make it short and sweet. Two quick questions. One, my driveway is on a downhill, so I get large snow drifts. Even if there's a couple inches of snow, I'll have a foot of snow in my driveway. So I'm looking to put a natural barrier there. I've used a snow fence in the past. So any suggestions on what I could put there? And I do not have a green thumb by any means. And then the other question is, underneath my bay window, I like to put some plants, and I have killed everything in the last 3 years. So I'm looking for some kind of shrub. If it was flowering, great. But if it's not, something to put under there. It gets light sun about maybe half the day.
And it gets water?
And those are my two questions. So, what's that?
We'll start with the second one first. It's a moist area. In other words, it's not so close to the house that it doesn't
get rained on. It's actually right next
on.
To the house.
Yeah.
So
it may be a very dry place, Jack, and you may need to water it. I know it may be a common plant, but the first thing that came to mind was hosta, because hosta will be this little easy-to-grow perennial, lots of different foliage colors that kind of don't mind living almost anywhere. Full sun locations are a little rough for them. But dry is not the end of the world. Any other suggestions?
My first idea was hydrangeas. There's hydrangeas that come in all different kind of heights. How many feet do you have up to the window?
It's about 4 feet up to the window, 4 or 5 feet.
Feet. So, for instance, there's a great hydrangea that I really like these days, which is called a Hydrangea paniculata Little Lamb. It's sort of a short shrub, lovely, great fall color. I think that would be lovely there.
And okay. The first thing that came to my mind was there's a lot of different varieties of spirea, and one particular one that I've always liked that's not new by any means, but it's called the Shirobana spirea. It produces a pink and white blossom. It'll bloom all summer. Based on what you just said in terms of your window height, it would actually, as long as you spaced it correctly, you would never really have to prune it. It would bloom all summer. It'll tolerate some sun. It'll tolerate some shade. It'll be adaptable. It usually can tolerate drought pretty well, and I think you'd be really happy with that as well.
So. All right, very quickly, the snowdrift question.
Could you give me the name of that last one more time?
Yep. There's a whole group of plants called spirea, but the one cultivar that I like in particular, I like a lot of them, but Shirobana, Shirobana, Shirobana spirea.
And for
two-tone flowers.
For a windscreen or for
snowscreen,
the spirea or the hydrangea would work as well.
They could, yeah.
Quite a few things would work, yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot of
Viburnums
options.
Viburnums would work, you know.
You know, you'd space them a little closer for the screen and, you know, space them a little further away so they look like more individual plants for your bay window accent area.
All right, Jack, we're going to move it along here. We go to John in Newburgh. John.
Yes,
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Montauk daisy that with the warm weather began to bloom, but then once it got colder...
No, Montauk daisy blooms in the fall. It can't be a Montauk daisy.
Well, it could have wintered in bud and then started blooming.
Oh. I've seen that before.
Because it was really mild.
Yeah, okay. It really started to turn green, quite frankly. Yeah. So I guess it was blooming or beginning of new season.
If it's just starting to grow out, I would suggest, John, that it will probably recover, and you could certainly wait a little while for those new shoots to come, and any brown pieces, just remove them.
Oh, so they're all brown pieces, so I was wondering if I should go ahead and cut those away.
I think if they're brown and not have no real signs of life, yeah, you could remove those now.
Okay, and this is a question that just came in. Patrick Donges, our producer, handed this. This was sent to the WAMC Facebook. Our small Albany backyard is a mess. We have grubs, ground bees, sand for soil, and a dog. We'd like to have grass for the kids to play on, but over the years, the grass has disappeared. Any help? What can we do?
In 6 minutes?
Well, how about in one?
This sounds like your yard, right?
It's exactly like my yard, but I'm sure my wife didn't send this. Yep.
Well, I would certainly look for there's a lot of different seed mixes, so that's my first advice. Look at your local garden center. Talk to an expert at the garden center and get a grade of mix for seed that is extremely durable, tough, drought-resistant, because you could put the wrong kind of grass in your lawn, and it'd be nothing but a maintenance headache. You'd have to put an entire irrigation system in to take care of it.
Oh,
and there are other ones you could literally seed out and never look at again and never do much with it.
And in the short term, keep the traffic off the area for some period of time.
Yeah.
You have to rotate the blocks, have a spot somewhere else to send the kids and the dogs.
Yep, fence it all, put a string around the area. Because once it establishes and gets a good root, just like Greg said, it's going to be really durable.
But is aeration really important?
In the fall?
It would be.
If there's compaction, for sure.
If there is, but she was saying sand, I thought she said.
Sand.
If sand is an issue, then
that
probably not compaction problems.
All right.
But otherwise, yes.
Let's try to grab another call or two here. NJ and Troy, you're on. Hello?
Oh, yes. Sorry.
That's okay.
Hi. My question is about clematis, however you pronounce it. I have two good bushes draped over a steel fence in the yard. And right now they're all spindly. And I've been told that in the spring you need to cut it down some, but I'm never sure where to do the cutting. Is there a ruling about where it would be good to start, at the roots or?
I like
what?
To, there's three different blooming forms of clematis, sort of 1, 2, 3, or ABC, I can't remember what it is. And so since you don't know which one you have, and we can't remember,
mm-hmm.
even if you tell us, which blooming form it should fall into, there's the rule of thumb of kind of going halfway. And that is you look at the plant, clean up the plant to some major wood, but fairly high, 3, 4, 5 feet high if it's that big or more. But take off all that small kind of messy stuff. And prune to, just like you would anything else, prune to some little bud. Right now, those clematis are starting to break bud. You'll see little green buds.
Oh, okay.
And prune so that you leave a quarter inch or so above that.
A quarter inch above them. Okay. Now, some years I get a lot of blooms, and some years I don't.
It may have to do with that pruning. Now, if you know the variety of clematis that you have, you can probably look up. And when it blooms this year, maybe you could bring in a piece to some arboretum or garden center or botanical garden, and they could help you identify it. But also knowing when it's blooming is somewhat helpful, what time of year. And you can figure out which way it is going to be best to prune that. All that information is available.
Or do you remember the years that it's bloomed profusely? Are those the years that you have pruned it? You don't remember? Okay, the correlation, yeah.
Well, NJ, that's where we are going to have to leave it. Thank you very much for being with us. Thanks to everybody who called in today. That's it for the program. We do love hearing from you. Get in line early next time we do this. We'll do it next month. Fred, Greg, Dorta, thanks for being here.
It's our pleasure.
We'll do it once again, I guess, just about a month from now. So support for WAMC comes from Mario's True Value Home Center, Valencia, New York. Two locally owned locations, open 7 days a week for building supplies, equipment rentals, and hardware needs, featuring Peachtree Doors and Windows, mariostruevalue.com. Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting, 845-336-6310. and White Square Fine Books and Art, East Hampton, offering used and rare books for readers and collectors, supporting the literary and art communities in Western Massachusetts, whitesquarebooks.com. Thanks again for being with us today. Tomorrow, I guess it'll be Moyers and Company. That's what we do on Friday at this time. On Monday, Dr. Marietta Angelotti will join Alan Chartok for Medical Monday on our 2 o'clock Vox Pop. That is Monday. Our engineer, thank you to Kimba Lipscomb today. Our phones were answered by Christy Carton. Our producer, Patrick Donges. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you for Medical Monday on Monday.